all happening has ceased. This is what is mean, the world has ceased. Now there is no samsara, no happening. He is as if he is not. That's why Buddha says, now I have become a no Atman, no self. There is no one inside me. I am just an emptiness. The flame has disappeared. And the house is vacant. Nothing is happening. What can you regard about it? At the most you can regard that nothing is happening. If something happens, it can be recorded objectively. But the method of science remains objective. And science is very much afraid of the subjective for so many reasons. The science and the scientific mind cannot believe in the subjective because first it is private and individual and no one can enter in it. It cannot become public and collective. And unless something is public and collective, nothing can be said about it. The person who is saying may be deceived, or may be deceiving others. He may be a liar. Or he may be just an illusion, not a liar. He may be thinking and believing that this has happened to him, and this may be just a delusion, a self-deception. So the truth for science must be objective. Others may be able to participate in it. So we can judge whether it is happening or not. Secondly, it must be that it can be repeated. It must be repeatable. If we heat water, it evaporates at a certain degree of temperature. It must be repeatable. So we repeat and repeat and again it evaporates at a certain degree. If only once it evaporates at 100 degrees and never again, or sometimes at 90 and sometimes at 80, it cannot become a scientific fact. It must be repeatable. And the same conclusion should be achieved through so many repeated experiments. But the subjective realization is not repeatable. It is not even predictable. And you cannot invite it. It happens. You cannot force it. You may achieve a deep meditation. You may have a very elated peak experience. But if someone says repeat it here, you may not be able to repeat it. On the contrary, because someone says, and you make an effort to repeat it, this very effort may become the barrier. Even the presence of observers may be destructive. You may not be able to repeat it. Science needs objective, repeatable experiments. And psychology, if wants to be a science, must follow scientific rules. Religion is subjective. It is not concerned with proving any fact. Rather, it is concerned to come to an individual experiencing of it. and the deepest must remain individual, and the ultimate must remain private. It cannot become collective, because unless everyone has come to the status of an enlightened one, collective, you have to grow to achieve it. So science and religion really cannot meet, because their approaches are different. Religion is absolutely private, concern of the individual with himself. Because of this, those countries which have been in the past more religious than others, they have remained individualistic. For example, India. India is individualistic. Sometimes it appears even selfish. Everyone is concerned with himself, his own growth, his own enlightenment. Not concerned with others, indifferent to others, indifferent to society, social conditions, poverty, slavery. Everyone is concerned with himself to grow to the ultimate peak. It looks selfish also. Western countries are more socialistic, less individualistic. That's why the very concept of communism was impossible with the Indian mind. Buddha and Patanjali, but we couldn't give a Marx. It had to come from the West. The society, the collective whole, is more important than the individual. Science is more important than religion. That which happens objectively is more important than that which happens in your absolute privacy. That which happens in the privacy is dreamlike for the West. Look at this. That which happens publicly, we have called it maya, illusion. Shankara says the whole world is illusion. Only that which happens deep down within you, and the ultimate, the Brahma that happens there, is real, and everything is unreal. Quite the opposite is the Western scientific attitude. That which happens within you is illusory. That which happens outside is the real. The reality is there outside, and the dream world is there inside. These are the two attitudes. So different, the approach is so diametrically opposite. There can be no meeting. There is no need also. Their dimensions are different. Their spheres are different. They never trespass each other. There is no conflict at all. And there need be no conflict. Science works with the objective world, and religion works with the individual, subjective world. They never cross each other. There cannot be any conflict. And to me, when you are working with the outside world, work with a scientific attitude. When you are working with yourself, work with a religious attitude. And don't create any conflict, there is no need. Don't bring science for the inner world, and don't bring religion for the outer world. If you bring religion to the outer world, you will create chaos. In India, we have created it. It is a mess. If you bring scientific attitude for the inner, you will create madness. The West has created it. Now the West is completely neurotic. And both have done the same mistake. Don't confuse the two. And don't try to bring the outer to the inner or the inner to the outer. Let the subjective be subjective and let the objective be objective. While you move outwards, be scientific and objective. And while you move inwards, be religious and subjective. There is no need to create any conflict. There is none. The conflict arises only because we want to impose one attitude on both realms. We want either to be scientific totally, to be religious totally. That's wrong. With the objective, the subjective approach will be false, dangerous, harmful, and the same vice versa. Fifth question. Someone asks, you have spoken about so many methods and techniques. The yearning to succeed in them is very great. How can we overcome our great impatience? Two things to be remembered. One, spirituality cannot be an outcome of desire, because desire is the root cause of our all anxiety and anguish. And you cannot direct your desire to the spiritual realm. But it happens. It is natural. Because we know only one movement. That is, we desire the things of the world. Someone desires riches. Someone desires fame. Someone desires prestige and power. Or something else. We desire things of the world. And through this desiring, we are frustrated. And we are bound to be frustrated. It is irrelevant whether a desire is fulfilled or not. If it is not fulfilled, we will be frustrated. Obviously. If it is fulfilled, then too we will be frustrated. Because whenever a desire is fulfilled, but the hope, the promise is not fulfilled. You can get as much wealth as you desire, but the wealth was not desired really. Something else was desired through it. That is never fulfilled. You can achieve wealth, but the hope that was lingering around, the dream of happiness, of bliss, of some ecstatic life, that is not fulfilled. If wealth is not achieved, you will feel frustrated. If wealth is achieved, then too you will feel frustrated. Because the promise is not fulfilled. The dream is not fulfilled. Everything is there. The means are there, and the end has escaped. It's elusive. Through desires, one comes to deep frustration. When this frustration happens, you start looking after something absolutely other than this world. A religious yearning is born. A religious longing. But again, you start desiring. You become impatient. You want to achieve this and that. The mind has not changed. The object of desire is different. It was wealth, now it is meditation. It was power and prestige, now it is silence and peace. Before it was something else, now it is something else. But the mind, the mechanism, the very working of your being is the same. You were desiring A, now you are desiring B. But the desiring is there. And desiring is the problem, not what you desire. It is not the problem. What you desire is not the problem. That you desire is the problem. Now you are again desiring. You will be frustrated again. If you achieve, you will be frustrated. If you don't achieve, you will be frustrated. The same will happen to you. Because you have not been able to see the point, you have missed the point. You cannot desire meditation because meditation happens only when there is no desire. You cannot desire liberation, nirvana, because it happens only in a desireless state. It cannot be made an object of desire. So to me, and to all those who know, desiring is the world. Not that you desire worldly things. Desiring, the very phenomena of desire. And when you desire, impatience is bound to be there. Because the mind doesn't want to wait. The mind wants to postpone. It is impatient. Impatience is the shadow of desire. More intense the desire, the more impatience will be there. And impatience will create disturbance. So how you will achieve meditation? Desire will create movement of the mind. And then desiring will create impatience. And impatience will bring you to more disturbances. So it happens, and I observe it daily, that ordinarily a person who was living a very worldly life was not so disturbed. And when he starts to meditate or to seek religious dimension, he becomes more disturbed, more than ever. The reason is now, he has even more keener a desire with him, more impatience. And with the worldly things, things were so real and objective, he could have waited for them. They were always in his reach. Now, in the spiritual realm, things are so elusive, so far away, never seem to be in the reach. Life seems to be very short, and now the object of desire seems to be infinite, more impatient, and then more disturbance. And with a disturbed mind, how you can meditate? So this is the puzzle. Try to understand it. If you are really frustrated and you have come to feel that all that is outside is futile, money or sex or power, prestige, just futile. If you have come to this realization, then a deeper realization is also needed. If these things are futile, then desiring is even more futile. You desire and desire and nothing happens. And your desiring creates the misery. Look at the fact that desiring creates the misery. If you don't desire, there is no misery. So drop desiring. And don't create a new desire. Simply drop desiring. Don't create a spiritual desire. Don't say, now I am going to seek God. Now I am going to find this and that. Now I am going to realize the truth. Don't create a new desire. If you create its source, you have not understood your misery. Look at the misery that desire creates. Feel that desire is misery and drop it. No effort is needed in dropping it. Remember, if you make an effort, you will create another desire. That's why you need some other desire. Because then you can leave it. Some other desire is there, you can hang to it. Cling to the new desire and you can leave the old one. To leave the old is easy if some new is to be gained. But then you are missing the whole point. Simply leave desire because it is misery. And don't create a new desire. And then there will be no impatience. And then meditation is not to be practiced really. It will start happening to you. Because the non-desiring mind is in meditation. Then you can play with these techniques, and I say play. Then you can play with these techniques. There is no practice. Practice is not a good word. The very thing is wrong. Then you can play with these techniques. And you can enjoy playing. Because there is no desire to achieve something. And there is no impatience to reach somewhere. You can play and throw play. When meditation is a play, everything is possible. And everything is possible immediately. Because you are not disturbed, you are not impatient, you are not in any hurry, you are not going somewhere, not reaching somewhere. You are here and now. If meditation happens, okay. If it doesn't happen, it is still okay. Nothing is wrong with you because there is no desire, no expectation, no future. And remember, when meditation or no meditation are similar to you, meditation has happened to you. You have reached. Now the goal has come. The ultimate has descended in you. this will look strange that I say that don't make meditation a practice, rather make it a play, a fun. Enjoy it while doing it, not for any result. But our minds are very serious, dead serious. Even if we play, we make it a serious thing. We make it a work, a duty. Play, just like small children. Play with meditation techniques. And then, much more is possible for them. Don't be serious about them. Take them as fun. But we make everything serious. Even if we are playing, we make it serious. And with religion, we have always been very serious. Religion has never been fun. That's why the earth has remained irreligious. Religion must become a fun and a festivity, a celebration. Celebration of the moment. Enjoying whatsoever you are doing. Enjoying so much and so deeply that mind ceases. If you really understand me, these 112 techniques will show you that everything can become a technique. If you really understand, that's why there are 112. Everything can become a technique if you understand the quality of the mind which brings meditation. Then whatsoever you do can become a technique. Be playful, celebrate it, enjoy it, move so deeply in it that time ceases. But time cannot cease if desire is there. Really, desire is time. When you desire, future is needed. Because desire cannot be fulfilled here and now. Desire can be fulfilled only in the future, somewhere. So you will need future to move. And then time destroys you. You miss eternity. Eternity is here. So take meditation as a fun, a festivity, a celebration of anything. You are digging just outside in the garden. It can become a technique. Simply dig and enjoy. And celebrate the very act. Become and forget the actor. The I is not there, only the action remains. And you are present to the action. Blissfully present. Then ecstasy is there. No impatience. No desire. And no motivation. If you bring motivation, desire, and impatience to meditation, you will destroy the whole thing. And then the more you will do, the more frustrated you will feel. You will say, I am doing so much and nothing is happening. People come to me, they say, I am doing this and I am doing that, and for so many months and for so many years, and nothing is happening. One seeker from Holland was here, and he was doing a particular technique for 300 times every day. So he told me, for 2 years I am doing this technique 300 times every day. Not a single day was missed. I have left everything because I have to do this whole day 300 times and nothing has happened. And he was just on the verge of a nervous breakdown. And because of the technique, so I said, the first thing is to leave this. Do whatsoever, but don't do this. You will go mad. He was dead serious about it. It was a life and death problem for him. It has to be achieved. And he said, who knows how many days are left. Time is short. And I must achieve it in this life. I don't want to be born again. Life is such a misery. He will be born again and again, the way he is doing. He will get more and more madder. But wrong. The whole attitude is wrong. Take meditation a play, a fun. Enjoy it. And then the very quality changes. Then it is not something you are doing as a cause to gain some effect. No, you are enjoying it here and now. It was and it is the effect both. It is the beginning and it is the end. And then you cannot miss meditation. You cannot miss it. It will happen to you. Because now you are ready to take it in. You are open. No one has said that meditation should be taken as a fun, but I say it. Make it a play. Just like a small children play with it. The last question. The other day you said the darkness is more fundamental to existence, while most religions hold the contrary view. Will you kindly shed some more light on this question, particularly in view of what modern science has to say about it? Does it not say that the last divisible components of matter are just electric energy? Again the same division, light and darkness. They are two. If you look at them through the mind, they are one, if you meditate upon them. Whether you meditate on light or on darkness, it makes no difference. If you meditate, the other is dissolving to it. Then light is nothing but less darkness. And darkness is nothing but less light. The difference is of degrees. They are not two things opposed to each other. Rather, 2 degrees of one phenomena. And that one phenomena is neither light nor darkness. That one of which these 2 are degrees is neither light nor darkness. Or it is both. You can enter into it from light, you can enter into it from darkness. Many religions have used light because it is more easier. Darkness is difficult, more uncomfortable. And if you try to enter through darkness, you have chosen a more arduous path. That's why Many religions have chosen light. But you can choose either. It depends on you. If you are adventurous, courageous, choose darkness. If you are afraid and don't want to go on an arduous path, choose light. Because both belong to one phenomena, which appears at one point as light, at another point as darkness. For example, this room is filled with light, but it is not filled with the same light for everyone, or is it? My eyes are weak, then the light is not so light as it is for you. I feel it a little dark. Imagine if someone from the Mars or from some other planet comes who has very penetrating eyes, then where you see light, he will see very much light, more light than you see. And where you see darkness, he will see light. There are animals, birds, who see in the night where you cannot see. For them it is light, for you it is darkness. So what is light and what is darkness? One phenomena, how much you can penetrate into it and how much it can penetrate into you, then on that penetration it depends whether you call it light or darkness. These polar opposites just appear to be opposites. They are not relative degrees of one phenomenon. So scientists say that the last divisible components of matter are just electric energy. But they don't say they are light. They say electric energy. Darkness is also electric energy. And light is also electric energy. Electric energy is not synonymous with light. If you give it the name electric energy, then light is one expression and darkness is another. But there is no need to move into scientific discussion about it. It is useless. Rather think about your own mind, what you will like. If you feel at ease with light, enter through light. That is your door. If you feel at ease with darkness, enter through darkness. And both will lead to the same. Many methods in these are concerned with light. Few are concerned with darkness. And because Shiva is trying to explain all the methods possible, he is not talking to particular types. He is talking to all types. But there are few persons who will like to enter through darkness. For example, a feminine mind more passive, more receptive. Will like to enter through darkness, it will be more acceptable. A male mind would like the light more. You may not have observed the fact, that many poets of the past and the present, many philosophers, and many others who have a deep insight into human mind have always compared female with darkness and male with light. Light is aggressive, a male element, the receptive, a female element. Darkness is like a womb, so it depends. If you can light darkness, good, enter through it. If you like light, enter through it. Sometimes even the opposite becomes appealing. You can try that also. There is no danger in trying anything because every path leads to the same goal. But don't go on thinking about what to choose. Don't waste time. Rather try. Because you can go on thinking forever that what will be suitable, what to do and what not to do, and why so many religions have insisted on light and so few on darkness. Don't get worried about these things. They don't help. You rather think about your own type, what will be suitable for you, in what you will feel more comfortable. And then start. And then forget all others, because these 112 methods, all methods are not for you. Even if one method you choose for you, it is enough. You need not go through 112 methods. One method will do. So just be receptive and aware so that you can catch the method that is for you. You need not get worried about every other method. It's unnecessary. Choose one, play with it. And if you feel good and something is happening, then move into it and forget all 111. If you feel you have chosen wrong, then throw it, choose another and play with it. If you try with 4, 5, 6 methods, you will fall upon the right one.